Joining me on the line now is Bill Hayes to talk about the modern obsession with exercise. In researching his book, Sweat, Bill runs, jogs, swims, spins, walks, bikes, boxes, lifts, sweats, and downward dogs his way through the origins of different forms of exercise, chronicling how they've evolved over time and dissecting the dynamics of human movement. Welcome to the show, Bill.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us. And what an interesting subject to kind of research and look back through the history of exercise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I've loved working out and exercising throughout my life. And the idea for this book, Sweat, actually came to me at a gym. It was quite a while ago, about 10 years ago. I was atop a Stairmaster, a cardio machine. And for some reason on that day, I paused the machine. I looked out at the gym floor, all these men and women lifting weights and doing crunches and yoga and different forms of exercise. And I just thought to myself, how did we all end up here? And if I were to trace a line backwards in time to the origins of exercise, where would I land? And so it really started there. And I spent years doing research on the history of exercise.
Interesting. I mean, if people were kind of asked that question, I mean, like a lot of things with technology and things like that, we've become more aware of things, I guess, in a way that we wouldn't have before. You know, if we go right back to the 80s, you know, the Jane Fonda workouts that are getting videos, and then it all changed to DVD. Then it's all on YouTube, and you know, the gyms have evolved over time. So kind of before then what was happening before the 70s, I guess.
Well, you know, that's exactly right. And I love that you played that Olivia Newton-John song. So many people, when talking about this book, so many people think that exercise is a 20th century phenomenon. Mm. Maybe something that people started being interested in, let's say, the 50s, but certainly the 1970s and 80s, when the whole fitness industry really exploded. But what I found is that the origins of exercise lie in antiquity, in ancient Greece and Rome, goes back about 2,000 years to the founding of the ancient Olympic Games and other athletic games in that empire, which is about the 8th century BC. And there was a sense of people sort of aspiring to be like those athletes. And it went so far as there were gymnasiums built in many or most towns during that time. I should add very quickly, though, that those gymnasiums in antiquity were open only to men and boys. So it'd be quite a few centuries before women were encouraged and permitted to exercise and welcomed into gyms.
Yeah. And how has that made a huge difference on how people's physiques have changed over time, do you think?
I think so, definitely. There's a different awareness about the benefits of exercise. And I certainly found evidence that ancient Greek physicians and philosophers, whether Plato, who was a wrestler himself, or Hippocrates or Galen, intuited the benefits of exercise. So Hippocrates, in the 5th century BC, wrote two treatises on healthy living. In it, he said, eating alone will not keep a man well. He must also take exercise. For food and exercise, while possessing opposite qualities, yet work together to produce health. So even back then, there was an intuitive understanding of the benefits. But I have to say, it wasn't until really the 1950s that there was solid scientific research or study proving the benefits of exercise for a healthier life.
Mm. So before the 1950s then, I mean, it sounds like a general statement, but because it was only available or only seen as something that men should be doing, did that automatically mean that men were fitter and more healthier and had better bodies than women?
Well, really, women started to, or were encouraged to exercise and permitted and allowed during the 19th century. I mean, one of the interesting things about researching this book was finding those intersections of different facets of history. Mm-hmm. So in the 19th century, with the rise of the women's rights movement, and the suffragettes, there was a new culture, a new sort of permissiveness for women and girls to exercise. And there were teachers and there were classes and there were books. And one of my favorite quotes in the entire book is from Susan B. Anthony, the women's rights activist, who in 1896 said of the bicycle, which had just recently been invented, she said, "The bicycle has done more for the emancipation of women than anything else in the world. I stand and rejoice every time I see a woman ride by on a wheel, the picture of free, untrammeled womanhood." So it's really in the 19th century that you see, that we see women and girls exercising alongside men and boys.
Oh, good. I'm glad it happened a lot sooner than, than yeah, the 1950s. Yeah,
it was long before Jane Fonda. Jane Fonda holds a very special place in the history of exercise, I must say.
Yeah, definitely. And she features in your book, doesn't she?
She does. And, you know, I approached her and that era, I guess, with a little bit of skepticism. I'm 62, so I was, you know, around when Jane Fonda came on the scene and aerobics became a trend around the world. And maybe I thought it was all a little bit campy or something.
Yeah.
But I went back and looked at the original Jane Fonda videos and her original Jane Fonda workout book. And this was during the pandemic, so it was especially apt because we were all, many of us were exercising at home. And what I found was that the original videos and workout book really held up, that they were very sound and solid and reasonable, good workouts. And that she was an amazing teacher, just naturally gifted, which is one reason why the videos themselves were so incredibly successful. She was a great teacher, and she herself helped develop most of those workouts featured in the videos and books.
Yeah. And they were easy to follow. You know, the music was always great. It was kind of, it made sense for people to be able to do them at home. And
yeah.
And now, I mean, so many reality stars and celebrities and soap stars and things have brought out, workout DVDs and things like that. It became a bit of a craze that everybody jumped on.
That's really true. That's really true. I think Jane Fonda really can be credited with democratizing exercise. So you didn't have to join a gym. You didn't have to hire a babysitter. You could do it at home wearing whatever you want. You could do it alone. You could do it with friends. The videos themselves were fairly inexpensive. So she had a lot to do with making exercise available to everyone, women especially, but also men. And the explosion of that whole industry.
Yeah. And a lot of how exercise has changed and evolved over the years has to do, or how people exercise, I should say, has to do with technology. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, I think, you know, going back to antiquity, even then they were recommending, physicians and philosophers were recommending very reasonable forms of exercise, like taking a brisk walk or going for a run or swimming. So some of the most basic exercises done moderately, in Plato's words, are still true. But on the other hand, as you said, exercise has evolved with technology, whether all different cardio machines or DVDs or workouts on your phone. Of course, there are probably thousands of different workouts that you can get on your phone and take to the gym or do at home. Or there are things like Peloton, the bike, that are accompanied by a kind of video. So yeah, exercise is always evolving. And, you know, one thing I tried to do with my book was to sort of, to learn about things that I didn't know. You know, I'd been exercising my whole life, but I was more interested in the ancient history and the Renaissance and the 17th century and 18th century and what people were doing then, a little bit more than what's happening in the present day.
And did you learn an awful lot then, things that you really weren't aware of before?
Yeah, I mean, there are two things that come to mind. The first is just a little bit gross, but it's absolutely true. And that is that in ancient Greece, the sweat of athletes was considered a prize commodity. And they even created or invented an instrument for scraping the sweat off their bodies and funneling it into little clay pots.
What did they do with the clay pots?
So it was a mixture of sweat and oil because they would oil up before exercising. And they would sell it at gyms. It was a source of income. And they believed it had medicinal qualities based on the wonderful idea, though completely metaphorical, that the sweat itself contained the essence of arete, or the essence of excellence. Now, it was called Gloyos, this sweaty, funky mixture, and it was sold for very basic dermatological reasons, like having warts, for example. The other amazing thing I discovered, so fast forward several centuries, was during the Renaissance, a physician, personal physician to a cardinal, wrote what is now considered the first comprehensive book on exercise. This was in 1569, and the physician and author was named Girolamo Mercuriale. He wrote it in Latin, and it covers just about every form of exercise known at that time: walking, running, swimming, wrestling, boxing, etc. Of course, it doesn't include things like the bicycle, which didn't come until the 19th century, or exercises like yoga, which were he just did not know about. He did not have that knowledge of yoga, though that was definitely happening in the East.
It's interesting and makes sense, I guess, that people will have known for centuries the importance of getting exercise, you know, before we had the bicycle, before we had any machines or exercise classes or things like that. Just the idea of, as you say, going for a walk or going for a swim in the sea, things that were all free and easy for people to do. It's interesting to try and understand and work out who decided that they were good for us. You know, science must have found out, you know, they must have known that increasing your heart rate is good for you. Have you found out as to who who came up with these ideas?
It's hard to say who, you know, specifically pin it down to one person. But Hippocrates and his mentor or his teacher were among the very first to record their thoughts on exercise, which were that exercise is beneficial. And as you said, you need to increase your heart rate. One should have a bit of a sweat. They always recommended moderation in exercise. They wouldn't have necessarily approved of bodybuilders and heavy, heavy weightlifters like we've had today. But yeah, it was a kind of intuitive understanding that it was just good for you, not only physically, but mentally, emotionally as well.
They would have probably found it very bizarre and not really understood the point of machines like the treadmill and and the bike from the point of view of, well, why don't you just go outside and do it? And it's funny, you still get people like that today who, especially living in Spain where we have a good climate, you know, where it's beautiful weather outside, living by the sea, to spend 50 euros a month to go and stand in a gym to walk on a machine. If you're doing other stuff, fine. But if you're just walking and doing the bike, you know, there is an argument to kind of say, well, why don't you just do that outside and get fresh air at the same time? And it's free.
you're absolutely right. It does seem kind of absurd sometimes. I'm glad people have a choice.
Yeah.
Especially for those who don't live in beautiful places like you do, beautiful, warm places. You know, when I bring up the subject of exercise, there are lots of people, of course, out there who dread exercise or hate it, whether they hate going to the gym or they just don't like to do it. And what I'd like to say is substitute the word movement for exercise. Exercise should be synonymous with movement. So just get your body moving, whether that's taking a walk, as you said, or dancing in your apartment alone, or going for a run or a swim. I think the word exercise itself has sort of a bad reputation for some people.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Movement. I like that. We need to move more, It is fascinating how for some people it's just part of their daily life, and you know, the same as brushing their teeth. You know, it's something that they just need to do and want to do on a daily mm-hmm. basis. And for others, as you say, it's a real chore and it's, oh, I really need to. Oh, I said I was going to, it's January. I said I was going to exercise 3 times a week. I'm already not doing that. Oh, you know, it's one, yeah. it's a massive hassle. It's a difficult thing for people to get into the habit of, but for some, it's so easy. It's fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I think for some people, they equate exercise with going to a gym and gyms are expensive and maybe they just don't enjoy that atmosphere. So I'll say to someone like that, well, get off your bus when you're coming home at the end of the day, coming home from work, get off your bus 2 or 3 stops early or get off the subway or metro 2 or 3 stops early and walk the rest of the way home. Mm-hmm. And think of that walk with real intention as exercise, as something your body not only needs, but enjoys. You know, the muscles are glad to be exercised.
Yeah.
And you can feel good about taking that short walk.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great to chat with you today, Bill Hayes. Thank you for joining us. If listeners want to get a copy of your book, it's called Sweat, A History of Exercise. It's available on our website in the bookshop section on tre.radio. Bill, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.